Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, brother, I'm still hanging in
there. There he is! There he is! Hey.
What three wrestling matches would you watch while stranded on a desert island? This is what I asked WWE and WCW legend Brian Clark when he paid a trip to Cultaholic Island for another episode of Desert Island Graps.
Continuing to make a rather impressive impression is Adam Bomb. This guy means business.
He has a run through opponents in almost a Goldberg-like manner, the way he has dominated matches. This man, Wrath, has been absolutely awesome.
I'm going to show you tonight why it's all about Chronic.
Brian Clark, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, brother. How are you?
I am very good. How was your SummerSlam weekend, Brian?
It was great. I was in Vegas. I had an appearance there. I was with Booker T, Medusa, Juventud, Andrade. It was a real good time. Really got to reconnect with a lot of people I have not actually got to see in a long time. Of course, you see them through media and stuff, but actual hanging out with them the whole day, it was a fun 3 days.
So would that have been your first bit of like social appearance since the World caught fire in 2020?
Yes, I was doing appearances. I had some in New York and the East Coast right prior to COVID. But going forward, I'm booked all the way until the end of the year as far as upcoming appearances and stuff. California, East Coast, Boston, a little bit of everywhere. And then I'll probably slow down around, December, Christmas time. Yeah.
How exciting to be back on the road and doing stuff again, though. Feels good, right?
It does. I will probably just do one per month. That's good for me because I don't want to be on the road. Mm. But one a month is usually just about right,
I hear you. And we're going to talk all about that as we go through today. But also today, Brian, while we've got you, I want to ask you to pick three wrestling matches that you could watch while stranded on a metaphorical desert island. So three matches with a little bit of something to Wrath / Adam Bomb and all in between. So what would you like your first match to be, Brian?
I thought about this once we talked last week, and there are so many great matches, and I know I'll be leaving out a lot. I think the first one I would just have to say would probably be Bret Hart and Austin, when Bret was slowly turning heel and Austin was starting to turn face, basically, where he had him submit, but never tapped out. He just passed out due to the blood loss. And so I think that would probably be my first one, yeah.
So we're talking WrestleMania 13, I believe, 1997 for that bad boy.
That sounds about right, yeah.
Where were you when you watched it for the first time? Where would you have been? You'd have been WCW, right?
Correct. I had started as Wrath, part of the whole Blood Runs Cold thing. And then, of course, after that, I would do Wrath as a single, which went on an undefeated streak for a while there. So, yeah, I would probably say that was about – I was doing the tag team at the time with Chris Canyon, who was Mortis under the mask.
Now, when you watched that match, did you realize how sort of significant it was to the wrestling landscape at the time.
Well, I mean, that was right in the middle of the Monday night, you know, the wars going on. And I was sort of in it also, you know, because I had worked both places. But I knew that I knew it was good for business, as they say. It really did, you know, just propel that storyline. And of course, when Austin did fully turn, I mean, you know, you can just, you know what he did. So yeah, it was a big, you know, a big turning point, I think.
At that time, yeah, with, you know, what was the general vibe from Camp WCW, sort of the night going to Nitro, the night after that match went down? Was there a feeling of something in the air there? Was there a lot of talk about that match?
You know, it was so long ago. I don't really have to think about how it felt in the locker room. But I think everybody in the business knew that, hey, this is big. You know, I think maybe at the time we were winning the Monday night ratings. So it was, I'm sure it was one of those things where, okay, they're going to do this, we're going to do this. It went back and forth for a long time. But it was good. I mean, it was exciting, sort of a little bit like it is happening now.
It's not when a match like that happens, and it's funny to look back on it, but in the moment, it's interesting to see sort of where you were and what you thought about. But let's wind the clock a little bit further back, Brian. Who gave you the wrestling bug in the first place? Can you recall?
I would have to say my grandmother.
Nice. It's over here. Grandmothers love wrestling. We can't. Well, it's amazing. They're constantly hitting people with handbags. It's incredible.
This was like in the 70s, okay? So, I was probably, I don't know, 7, 8 years old, maybe. And I'm from Florida. I live in Arizona for the last 20 years or so. But at the time growing up in Florida, they would come through my hometown, not very often, maybe every few months or so. But when they did, she would get ringside seats. And so, I had the view. And I got to meet some legends. I mean, as a kid, I got to see Andre the Giant, Buddy Colt, Dusty Rhodes, Ox Baker, just Terry Funk. You know, there were so many people that were in the Florida territory that, you know, as they rotated a lot back then, but yeah.
When your nan took you to your first wrestling show, can you remember what you thought about at that time and like anybody that caught your eye?
This is a true story. Out back where the wrestlers would park, all the kids, you know, would watch the cars pull up and stuff. And this huge white Cadillac pulls up, right? And so all the kids run to the door to, you know, look and see who it is. And we were like, okay, we sort of realized who the person was, right? And the door opens, and he's got like four, had to be pepperoni pizzas on his lap, okay? We're talking Andre the Giant.
Of course it was Andre.
The door, I'm probably 7, 8 years old. The door opens up, and I can remember this even now. The door opened up, and all the smell was pepperoni pizza. And then, of course, he steps out and stands up, and I'm just like, oh, my God. But that's a true shoot story right there.
Was he one of your grand's favorites as well, was Andre?
I think so, just for the fact that I think he was a face during that time, from what I remember, you know.
At the time then, so you went with your grandmother to the wrestling, but what was Brian's plans like pre-wrestling? Like what were you looking to do with yourself?
Well, I am a military veteran. And my family is all veterans. My father served the Marine Corps in the Korean War. Both my nephews are special forces. Like I said, I served. My grandfather served. All my uncles in all different branches. So I knew that I was going to serve a military term of duty. And then from there, while I was in the Air Force, I got on the military powerlifting team and built myself up and worked out, and I just luckily grew to 6'6". So, but I was always really athletic, and got on the Air Force powerlifting team. And then when my my military time was up. You know, I was even in the military, I was watching wrestling. Every chance I could get, I was watching it. One year I was in the military, I was stationed over in Belgium. And so I didn't really get to see it that much because I was on a remote assignment. But once I got back to the States, it was red hot and I was still following it. But I also knew that I had, from there I would go on, I'd walk on at Central Missouri State University and play college football and earn a full scholarship there.
Because at one point, so would you have said maybe either to continue doing more stuff within the military or maybe a football background? If you could choose one of those two at that point, like where do you think you were sort of leaning towards?
I was leaning definitely towards football. I thought I'd served my country and the unit, did everything I could do military-wise. I knew I was not going to be a career military person. Like I said, I walked on at Central Missouri State, earned a full scholarship, but still wrestling was in my mind always. Even in college football, when I'd make a tackle, I'd get up, cut a promo on somebody. I just had it. I couldn't help it, man.
So you've been bitten by the bug like long before then.
Yeah.
But who was somebody that you met then that kind of gave you the impetus to go, actually, this could be your career? Can you remember somebody that sort of moved you in that direction?
Absolutely. Someone told me that a wrestler, retired wrestler, former legend, I would say, Ox Baker, lived about a half hour from me. And I said, I got to meet him. I said, let's go. We'll find out a way. I got to knock on his door, whatever it takes. And that person, a friend of mine, set the meeting up. Well, I guess he thought that maybe he was sending over a guy that's, 5'10", 200 pounds. And I walk in the door, I'm 6'6", 300 pounds, and he's like, oh my God, big man, So he went crazy. And he was like, oh yeah, you're definitely, So he put me over and I was just, I was so green, I didn't know. but yeah, that was the first person that really got me saying, oh man, this, I got somebody that can help me,
Because Ox Baker went on to manage you, didn't he? And that's got to be a real sort of feather in the cap for you, for somebody that, you were chomping at the bit to get into wrestling. And the first person you meet is like, come on in, get amongst it. Can you, that first time, it's always interesting to find out when people discover the thing behind wrestling, Brian. I always feel like it's a bit like magic, in the sense that once you kind of realize sort of what goes on away from it, you're either disappointed or you go, that's amazing, I want to know how to do that and do it my own way.
Yeah.
And was it the same for you? Once you kind of realized that what went on behind the scenes, did it suck you in more, or did you take a bit more convincing?
No, I at the time, it was very hard to get in the business. We're talking around 1989, 1990, that time frame. So it was still very locked up and tight as far as getting in. And they would weed out anybody that was not ready. I did figure out, though, that as much as great as Ox was to be around, Ox was a brawler. He was never really like me. I wanted to do all the high flying and all the everything. I wanted to learn to be, I wanted to be trained properly. And to do that, I had to... I wanted to and had, had to move to Atlanta to be trained by Dwayne Bruce and Jody Hamilton. So that's where that's where I really said, okay, this is what I need. This is what I got to do. And then, once I was trained, I was able to start getting booked and getting my feet wet properly.
So with Ox then, how did he take that then, when he said, look, you can own, I need to go to the power plant to do the next level? Like, how did he take that news?
Oh, he was fine with it. He knew, and I knew, like I said, and I got an invite to the power plant, but it wasn't called a power plant back then. It was just an old carpet warehouse, basically. Nothing like what they had later on. They didn't even call it the power plant. I don't know what the hell that, I don't remember what they called it. But yeah, Ox was fine with it. He understood and he wished me the best. And, you know, it was not, there no, I mean, we stayed in touch throughout the years. So yeah, he was absolutely okay with me going and being properly trained.
What's something that Ox has told you that has stayed with you?
Save your money. at least make some investments. You know, just different things. I think of him from time to time, and you know, some of the funny things. He was such a character. To see him on screen, he's just a scary monster. I mean, he did this movie called Escape from New York with Kurt Russell. I don't know. You probably never heard of it. Maybe you have.
No, I've seen it.
Yeah, that face. I mean, you know, Ox was not a worker. You know, he was more of just, you know, not even close to being a technician. You know what I mean? But he just had, he had the look that could still captivate an audience and cut a promo that was scared the hell out of most people.
He was one of a kind, wasn't he, Ox? Absolutely one of a kind. So it took, so you went off to do stuff with Jody Hamilton and with Dwayne Bruce. And had you been Night Stalker at this point, or is Night Stalker still to come, Brian?
No. I chose that name while I was, see, that's another thing. I was still in college, which you couldn't do this today. It wouldn't be allowed for NCAA violations or whatever. But I was wrestling. I was actually on the AWA, which is on ESPN, and still in college playing football, which is sort of a little strange. But yeah, I came up with that name in college and I said, okay, I'll give this a shot. Why not? And I just kept it for a while. I used it. I finally got a break in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, which is Jim Cornette's promotion.
With the name, is there anything behind the name? Behind Night Stalker?
A little bit. There was an old TV show in the 70s. It was a series. And that was the name of the show, was The Night Stalker. And so I got it from that. That's where I got it. That's where the name came from. I remember watching that show as a kid. And it was about this guy. He was like a vampire hunter, kind of a little bit like that, you know. And so that's where it came from. Yeah.
Nice.
No real scary meaning other than that TV show.
Would you say it's one of your favorite TV shows of all time?
I would probably say as a kid, yeah, of course, yeah. I watched, that was a weekly show I didn't miss, I guess, yeah.
Was there issues with you going back and forth from college to doing the college and college football and doing wrestling? Was there ever any, did that cause any issues with the schooling that you had?
You mean while I was in college?
Yeah, so like you're doing AWA whilst you're at collegiate football and doing college there. Did that cause any problems?
No, not really, not at the time. I wasn't making a lot of money. I don't even know if it was legal to do. Like I said, I doubt you would get away with it today. I just did it. I just, you know, that's what I wanted to do. Even in when the off season for college football was, you know, I was trying to train anywhere that I could. Physically, I was still training always. I've never stopped weight training, even to this day. But at the time, you know, I was trying to figure out where I needed to go to be properly trained, and I knew that place was Atlanta for me.
Do you think if wrestling hadn't come along, what do you think you would have been doing?
I probably would have pushed the football envelope. But I really loved pro wrestling. Like I said, that's something that was it was my bucket list. It was one of those things that, you know, and I'm glad I did. Yeah.
So let's go back to your matches then. So we've got Hart versus Austin, WrestleMania 13. That's the first match. What would you like your second match to be then, Brian Clark? What are we thinking?
I was researching today, and I know I shouldn't be researching. And the only reason I research is just because there's just so many damn good matches.
Mm.
I was I was going to say Punk and Cena from 2011.
So that would be the Money in the Bank match they had?
I think that whatever 2011 was, I think that was it, yeah.
So by that point, where would Brian Clark have been at that point?
Oh, then? Yeah. Brian Clark had retired as All Japan Champions in 03. So I was already out of the business, but I still, even today, I still watch it. I don't watch everything, but I still watch it. And so I thought they had the whole storyline and everything was good, you know. And it was a good damn good match too. So
with that one, a lot of the build up to that is CM Punk breaking the fourth wall and cutting those promos directly down the camera and talking about stuff behind the scenes. Like watching that as somebody who's been through the system, did that resonate with you? Some of the stuff that he was saying, Brian.
I think that's why one of the reasons I chose it was because that he was able to talk about things that needed to be talked about, especially WWF/Vince, you know, that whole, all the BS that the guys had to put up with. And like me, I was working for Vince at a time when we were working 290 days a year plus other commitments that whatever came up. So I understood it even though they had a lighter schedule than we had. And those before me had even a heavier schedule. But they still worked the guys to death. And that was always been an issue with me and with a lot of guys. And he was able to talk about those kind of things, about the hell that we go through and then not really being appreciated for it at times. So, yeah, I understood what he was talking about.
And it was a great contrast to being there with someone like John Cena, who is very much that company guy through and through, who embodied the you know, 300 days plus a year spirit of that. I don't know how much in terms of conversation or such that you've had with John Cena, but as you know, we've recently just had his comeback. What have you made of watching that?
I did watch it. Like I said, I did SummerSlam weekend. I mean, I know that he was coming back and to put over someone. And so I understand that part of it. It's sort of like passing the torch to some degree. So, you know, I understand why he did it and why he was asked to do it.
Obviously, on the other side of it, with CM Punk, massive weekend last weekend to see CM Punk return to wrestling through AEW. Did you catch what went down there then, Brian, from Chicago? Because that was quite a moment in wrestling, it feels like.
Oh, yeah. I had finished up my appearance that afternoon and sitting in my hotel. I had to order some sushi. And it was the first time I can remember. I watched both shows like back to back. Like one went on, and then the other one came on. And so, yeah, I watched both of them. Yeah. Very entertaining. Absolutely, yes.
What does it mean to have someone like a CM Punk back in the industry? For someone like yourself who's been there and done that and seen so much and still very much a part of the business, what does it mean to have someone like CM Punk back in the circuit?
I think it's a great thing. I think that, you know, it's always been that way with competition. It's going to bring out the best, whether it be college football, collegiate powerlifting, military powerlifting, training, whatever it is. Competition is good, you know, because we got a lot of the same old once WCW was over and finished. And now we've got someone who's knocking on the door. I think it's a good thing. I think it's good for everybody.
You were on the WWF side of things just as the Monday Night War was just getting underway. I think you'd left just before it really all kicked off. And the reason I'm really excited to chat with you, Brian, is because here at Cultaholic, we do a weekly podcast, which is we've been watching every episode of Monday Night Raw from the very beginning. And I've been able to watch, you know, I've been watching the journey of Adam Bomb. Okay. During that time, and I will say to you exactly what I say on the podcast, like how were you not like How was it not a case where Adam Bomb was the top guy there? And it drives me crazy to watch it because, and I'm not just saying this because you're here, Brian, and I hope it, yeah. You know, I don't want you to think this is pandering because you're here. And I've said this when you're not here. Like you portray a moveset, a look, a dynamism, a charisma that in a time where the company was so lacking in so much, like you jumped off the page. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out why we didn't connect the dots and go ding, ding, ding. There's your guy. And again, yeah. I'm not saying that because you're here.
Brian. No, I've heard that a lot. That's one of the reasons I left. You know, I had some promises that were not kept. The money was, the schedule was unbelievably grueling. The pay was horrible. And Vince was going through a steroid trial at the time, trying to keep himself out of prison. And he's working us to death. And I had a huge deal. Like it was very similar to Randy Savage's Slim Jim. I had a big deal with an energy drink commercial, a Coca-Cola type beverage energy drink. And that got pulled from underneath me. And it would have been a huge money thing. And so just things kept happening. I was just like, you know what? I can go to Atlanta and get five times the money, which I did, and go work for TBS, Ted Turner, Eric Bischoff. And so that's why I left. It was just a matter of, I was looking for the light at the end of the tunnel, but I couldn't see it.
At the beginning of that though, when you're pitched the Adam Bomb character, like what goes through your head when you're told this rather outlandish sort of post-nuclear superstar? What went through your head, Brian?
Actually, I liked it. And I'll tell you a story, and I've told this before, and I'll go ahead and tell you again. I was pitched two different things. One was Adam Bomb, of course. The second one was the Ringmaster. Now, yeah, exactly. The Ringmaster, in 93, if you go back and look at it, and if people don't believe me, they can check with the trademark commission, because I'm done defending it. My point being is that those are the two that they sent me. So they copyrighted a lot of stuff back then. And that was one of the things that they come up with. I even had the photos and stuff of the original stuff of what they sent me. The Ringmaster was like a guy with like a whip and a top hat, as he was a ringmaster in a circus. And I'm just like, that is not happening. One, I'm not a ringmaster, because I wasn't. I was still learning my craft. And secondly, the Adam Bomb thing just popped with the colors and the whole, all the stuff. And then I personally added like the glowing eyes to it. I added a lot of stuff myself. I just knew I could do more with it.
So you added the eyes. So did you have any other autonomy over that character? Because we hear a lot of stories now about how, you know, you hear stories in WWE, you're told, this is what you're doing, go and do it. So did you have a little creative control when it came to how Adam Bomb was put together?
Tom Fleming is the guy who I've actually reconnected with, and we have some new merchandise out through Tom, painting work by Tom Fleming. Tom was the one who created Adam Bomb and came up with it. So Vince actually, you know, Vince didn't come up with it. It was Tom who did it. And then Vince said, oh yeah, I like that one. You know, send him these choices. I think Tom did a great job with it. I was able to put a lot of my ideas with it. On a variable level, it even and into merchandising, which is what sort of I'm even doing today, in merchandising and stuff. So they didn't have merchandise for me, and I came up with all the stuff even back then. So yeah, I had some influence on it.
So those who will watch the shows from then, they'll know that, you know, it was a ring attire that stood out, and it was those foam bombs that you would throw into the crowd. And that is and again, another reason why, Brian, and again, I'm not saying it because you're here. Those are the bad boys. those. I'll take 50. But that,
go to my eBay store is loaded.
There's a link in the description of the podcast if you want to get there some Adam Bomb bombs. Get amongst it. But again, another reason why for me is watching. I was like, this seems too good to miss. You've got merch, and that's a big part of what it does. So the bombs were your idea then, to throw those foam bombs into the crowd.
Yes. Those, and then again, like I said, they didn't have any merchandise, no t-shirts, anything. So I came up with all my designs and ideas and stuff. Then I went to a graphics person there in Atlanta, had them put together, knocked on the door, Vince, sit down, had a meeting, showed him the stuff. He's like, oh, this is great. I'll have the merchandise in a week. And he did. Just that quick.
So he liked it and he went, there you go.
Absolutely. But without me taking that step of saying, this is how do I not have merchandise? You know, I mean, I had an action figure and stuff, but I didn't have, shirts and all the other stuff. Yeah.
Is that a bit of advice that you would give to people coming through that system now to be a little bit more, to use your initiative more and pitch stuff more often?
Well, if you're creative and everything you're doing is tied to the character and helps get the character over, I would say yes. By now, and I even know a couple of guys that went in and did the same thing after I did it, and they got shot down. So it's got to be, I mean, you've got to be on the cutting edge of knowing what's happening and where the merchandise is and what really pops and what will sell. I have an idea. I'm creative enough that I can go work out and do an hour worth of cardio. When I come home, I've got a new t-shirt design in my head. I just do. I'm everything I've got, not to talk about merch, but I've got 19 different shirts that I have designed that are all on PWTs, which is, the place to go for merchandise. But yeah, I'm just creative. Everything from Adam Bomb to Wrath to Tag Team Champions, Chronic, all that stuff. I work on it, but I enjoy it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
About the identity of our mysterious ally, and you've seen exactly what he can do. Tonight, I reveal his name. I have signed the most dangerous man in the history of pro wrestling. Now stare in awe as I unleash the wrath.
Well, it's one of the seven deadly sins. The man's name is Wrath. And he has, as Vandenberg has said, been quite a commodity for this group. Yeah, but he's been a commodity in a very sneaky way. He's never been one-on-one with anybody, so let's see what he's got.
I would think from what we have seen so far, and Glacier would probably be the first to tell you, the man is lethal.
I think when we talk creative, we have to jump across to your time in WCW and the stuff with Wrath and Glacier and Mord. And it was just that whole story, again, like Adam Bomb, it just pops off from everything else going on during that time. Can you tell a little bit of a story for us, Brian, about how all of that came together, that incredible Blood Runs Cold story arc that was told during the Monday Night War?
Sure. I had left working with Vince because I honestly had enough. So I left there. And I still had a little bit of time on my contract. So I worked for a company called Hammerlock Wrestling in the UK.
You came over here, didn't you? Yes, right in 95, 96 time.
Yes, correct. And so when my run was finished up with Hammerlock, it was just the right timing to sign my new deal. So I signed a new 3-year deal with Eric Bischoff for WCW. And that's when they pitched the idea of the Blood Runs Cold. And so they had a couple guys in mind, but I was one of the I'd had the most recognition, I guess, out of the group by far, honestly. I'd already been to WWF, Smoky Mountain. These other guys were still very talented and stuff, but still just not had ever experienced the next level, I guess, is what I'm saying. But yeah, they pitched the idea. It was all off of Mortal Kombat, basically, that storyline with the martial arts and the karate and stuff. And I actually spent about 6 months in a dojo in Atlanta, judo, kickboxing, karate. I did all that training for this. And we got it up and running, and it did okay. But again, it came in at the time that the NWO started. So it really got watered down. Versus, because NWO really superseded everything, if you think about it, with even over on Raw, SmackDown, whatever, it was just that big. And it got hot, and they added 20 people in the NWO. And so it got out of hand. After the Blood Runs Cold thing, that's when I had a meeting with Eric, and I said, let me do Wrath the way I want to do it, which is what I did. I blended a little bit of Wrath and a little bit of Adam Bomb, and it worked. And it went undefeated for, I don't know, 7-8 months.
But you say as well, like at that time, the NWO was such a dominant presence on all of those shows. Right. Like, did you feel like you were in competition with all that was going on there to make yourself jump out?
Well, again, like I said, I think competition is a good thing. Yeah, I think it made everybody work hard. And by that time, guys were jumping back and forth again, not just jumping to WCW, but WCW guys were saying, okay, I want to go work for Vince. I think maybe Jericho had left, and that may have been a little bit later, earlier, I'm not sure. But a lot of guys had left, back and forth. But yeah, that's why I wanted to do Wrath my way as a singles competitor, so that I come up with that meltdown finisher and just a lot of things that I knew would work. I always had I had a good pulse as far as knowing what would pop. And that was one of the things that I was right about.
What ideas did you pitch, or did you want to see come to fruition with Wrath that we didn't quite see? I know Wrath versus Goldberg was something that was very much in circulation around that time.
Yes, I've worked Bill a lot of times in Japan and the US and all over, really. Great guy. Love working with him. Yeah, it was just one of those things that it didn't happen. I think they were going to go with Nash and have Nash. They wanted Nash to beat Bill's undefeated streak. So they had him beat my undefeated streak the month before to help build him up for Bill. So that's the direction it went. I think we could have had a hell of a program, honestly. You know, as the, for the way it was going and building.
What do you make of Bill still being in the in the circuit now? He was just he was at SummerSlam last Sunday. Did you catch that? Did you get to catch up with him?
I did. Man, it's you admire the fact that he can go and do it and keep himself in that condition. But man, it's got to be tough on him. I don't know how much more he's got. It's hard to say. He may have only signed a couple of event deal. I don't know those specifics. Maybe he'll go do Saudi or something like that. Hard to say. But I think he's coming to the end of it real soon. But he's had an amazing career, and he's done just about everything, really. So
we've still got time for Wrath versus Goldberg, though. We've still got time.
Hey, brother, I'm still hanging in
there. There he is. There he is. Right. He's still ready. He's still ready.
Brother. I don't miss workouts, man.
You still do them, though, right? You're in amazing shape. Brother.
Yeah.
Well, behind the guns of Brian Clark on the webcam that we're watching is a selection of championships. I see the WCW tag team title behind you, one that you held very proudly with Brian Adams as part of Chronic. With that team, like, was that something that you had pitched? Because this is coming off the back of doing stuff with Wrath, and it was something that had was a bit less in the fantastical and more in the real. Was that something that you'd pitched, or something that had been pitched to you?
The way it happened, Vince Russo had came in to as hired as a writer, booker, that capacity. And Vince may have actually had control of a lot of stuff. I'm not quite sure his title. But I'd always had a good relationship with Vince Russo back from my WWF time. And of course, he had a good relationship with Brian. But at the time, I was recovering from an ACL injury. So I blew my knee out. I was out for probably 6 months till it healed up. And Brian called me. And he said, hey, how you doing? And he said, I was thinking about, I've been in Japan off TV for a while. And he asked me about tagging up. And I sort of shot it down the first time. Maybe I'll just come back as Wrath and, get myself healed back up and back as return as Wrath. And he calls me the next week. So after a couple of calls, I'm thinking, maybe this might be the thing to do. And we did. And it was amazing. We had so much in common that I really didn't realize, even though the years prior to working with him, how we became such good friends so quick, so fast, and our similarities, both 6'6", 290, both former military veterans, both just Brian and Brian. There's so many things about us. And then we went out there. I mean, we got over immediately. I mean, we blew the roof off the place. And we were just like that steamrolling kick-ass tag team that nobody could stop. I mean, that's how it felt. And the fans showed us that reaction just instantly.
Tell me a favorite road story of yours from you and Brian Adams at that point.
Oh, God.
I know there's loads. I know there's going to be loads.
I'll just tell you, there's so many. I would, and I've said this before, and it's Brian could have the entire locker room rolling, laughing, okay? And Brian and I worked out together, traveled together, trained together, same hotel, different rooms, but same hotel, eat dinner, lunch, breakfast, whatever. And he would be on the road, and he would start telling stories about people and shit. Are just about the business. And there would be times where I would say, Brian, I'm giving you two options. Either stop talking or pull the car over. Since I'm laughing so hard, I cannot breathe. I mean, tears are rolling down my face. He was that funny, man. I'm just like, stop it. I can't breathe. That's just an idea of how good he was. And his impressions, he could impersonate Vince. He can impersonate just about anybody. Great, great storyteller. And just a, a wonderful person, wonderful human being, and man, I miss him every day. Absolutely.
Yeah, we did. We lost Brian in 2007. Can you remember, if you don't mind me asking, can you remember where you were when you found out?
Absolutely. Yeah. We had a lady that was handling some of our publicity, sort of like a fan club president. And I was here in Phoenix. And she called me and told me. I talked to him probably a few days prior to. And then one of those things, well, did you hear? And I'm like, hear what? You know, she told me. So, yeah.
For those, obviously, we've talked about his humor. What would you like the legacy of Brian Adams to be?
A man that you would love to be around. That everybody, there was never a bad word about him. Just that good of a guy. Always, even in the hardest times of traveling on the road, can make you laugh. Even if he wasn't trying to, he would still get a laugh at some of the things he would do. You just gravitated toward the guy because, like I said, I was a lone wolf a little bit in WWF, and even as Blood Runs Cold and then as Wrath. But when I tagged with him, I was like, I wanted to be with him. You know what I mean? He was that kind of a guy. You wanted to hang out with him because you knew you'd be in a good mood all day because you're laughing. So, yeah, I would say that.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Before we get to your third and final match, I like to spring this on people because it's nice to get their immediate reaction. It's nothing bad, I promise. I'd like to ask if you could, as well as taking three wrestling matches onto this metaphorical desert island, if you could also take with you a movie, an album, and a luxury item. What would they be? So we'll start with a movie, Brian. If you could only take a movie with you, one that means something to you, what would the movie be?
Oh, that's tough, man. I got to have some comedy, I guess. I love a lot of the John Candy stuff back in the day. I would probably go with this movie called As Good As It Gets with Jack Nicholson.
Nice shout.
I'm guessing, but there's another one with Kevin Costner called Open Range, which is a Western.
Are you a fan of a Western, Brian?
Well, that particular one, yes. It would probably be one of those two, just because they're just, and I love Jack Nicholson's work.
It's a lovely film, As Good As It Gets. It's quite life affirming, I think is the way to describe it.
Yeah. So you know the movie, right?
I know the film. Yeah, it's a really. But okay, one of those two. We'll leave it at that. I won't make you choose one of those two. It's very cruel. How about an album, Brian? What album would you take with you?
That's tough too because I listen to not everything, but I listen to a lot of stuff. I listen to a little bit of the older stuff too, and I'll go ahead and say this album just for the fact that I just spoke with him about it 2 weeks ago, and I sent him my original album, and he signed it for me. It's up here in my office. He signed it for me and also threw in a couple of 8x10s to me. So it would be Lou Gramm, Foreigner 4.
That's very showbiz. How did you and Lou get hooked up?
A friend through media told me, says, hey, I know Lou. He lives here in Rochester, New York. And Lou knew about wrestling and knew who I was because I messaged him first and sent him some messages. And I sent him a couple photos and said, hey, man, I'm a huge fan because I am. I listen to the music all the time. I also listen to Fozzy, Jericho. You know, I listen to a lot of stuff. But that was the very first concert that I had ever went to as a kid in high school. So to actually acknowledge and sign my original album, that's got to go with me. Yeah,
I like that. And how about a luxury item? What would you take as something that hasn't got to have like a physical use? It can have a sentimental value. It can be maybe a piece of technology that you couldn't part with. It could be anything like that. You could even take Skylar if you wanted for a luxury item.
What's that again?
You could take Do we have a visitor?
Are you giving me the office? Come here.
Oh, do we have a visitor?
You said Skylar, right?
I certainly did.
You're talking about
this? Oh, and there you are. Hi, Skylar.
She's taking a nap.
Oh, does she sit with you in the office normally?
Of course, yeah.
Oh, she's beautiful. Yeah. What's the story with Skylar? Can you remember how you came to have Skylar in your life?
Absolutely. Okay.
Skylar's a dog for those listening on the podcast. This isn't just a random human being that Brian has
picked
up. I forget this is audio sometimes.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Skylar is our second Sheltie. We had another one prior to her, and she passed away about 2.5 years ago. And it was devastating, you know what I mean? Because they're like family, you know? And we waited. And then, of course, COVID hit. And then my wife, Michelle, said, and I felt it too, it was about time. You know, I had to go through that grieving process for my first dog. And we looked around. We're like, we cannot find it. It had to be a Scottish Sheltie, which is what she is. She's not a big like Lassie. She's a Sheltie. And so we ended up going, actually Michelle went to Dallas, Texas to get her. And she had to bring her back on the flight and everything. And so we've had her for 15 months now. So we had her all through COVID. And man, she's just been, she's such a loving dog. It is amazing how, I should go and give you a bear hug. I mean, just, it's crazy. But she's been great.
Tell me something that Skylar's taught you about yourself. It's quite a deep question that, but I feel like pets have that power, you know, Brian.
Yeah, I'm going to have to probably say more patience.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's gotta be it. Because I had her as she was like 8 weeks old. And, you know, here I am chasing her around this puppy. She drives me crazy, you know, getting into everything. But she's gotten so much better. She has. She really has. She's just been a blessing, honestly. I don't know what I've done without her during COVID. It was rough.
Dogs are amazing. Dogs are absolutely amazing. They really, really are. As you say, like we are coming out of COVID and the world's opening back up again. And feel free to ignore this part. There was some stuff in the press last year about yourself, which has all been resolved now. But the reason I say that is there any trepidation for yourself? Was there any trepidation for yourself sort of getting back out there? Because your schedule has just gone boom, and no pun intended. And you're everywhere now. But after all that kind of got printed last year, was there any trepidation on your part to get back out there?
No, it wasn't. I knew that everything was going to be dropped as far as that case. I was very disappointed in the fact that it dragged on as long as it did through the COVID process. So that really was frustrating on my I felt like I couldn't do anything, but I knew what the outcome was going to be because I know that I didn't do it. It was just frustrating to me, just because you have friends that are in the wrong, just doesn't mean you're in the wrong. And I knew that from the day, I said it from day one. And I appreciate those people that have stood by my side, and I was totally vindicated. Just like, that's the thing about any kind of a charge or anything that's, you will hear, when it first happens, all this may be going on, but you'll never hear, it's very rare. I mean, Yahoo News picked it up and a few things showed that I was totally vindicated. And of course, you know, you never hear the second half of it. People don't care. They just want to hear about the mud. And it's all rear view mirror stuff. It's over 2 years. I'm done. Onward and upward, brother.
And as we've said, like your schedule has just been incredibly busy, and you're very much back out there again doing stuff. And is there anything like from your career, from the very beginning to where we are now, all through the days of Adam Bomb and through Wrath and through Chronic, is there anything that you wish you still had time to do in ring that you didn't quite get a chance to do
in ring? Man, I don't know. I feel like I've worked with, in my era, I've worked with 99% of the people. I've had 30 or 40 casket matches. I've done pay-per-views. I've done everything. I guess the only thing I did not do was work with Hogan. He's the only one that I could, you know, being in the same company at the same time. You know, when you're on that WWF schedule, you end up working with everybody. I got to work with Savage, Brett. Seemed like everybody at one point or another. Yeah.
Is there anybody on the scene at the moment that could tempt Adam Bomb to put the singlet on one more time, or maybe could call Wrath back out? Is there anybody that could do that?
If it was 20 years ago, I would say Wrath versus Drew McIntyre.
Nice.
That's what I would think. But I'm a huge supporter of Lance Archer also in AEW. So both of those guys, man, I think they're fantastic.
And you know what? And Drew is from this side of the water where we didn't really touch on it, but I will just dip back and ask you, like you were on our side of the pond briefly in the mid 90s between WWF and WCW doing stuff with Hammerlock. Was there anybody from then that you seem to remember you clicking with and you having a good time with? It'd be rude not to ask about the British wrestling scene when you're here. Because the wrestling scene then was a strange one because it was kind of really going through a lot of changes, and there wasn't the depth that the British wrestling scene has now. Like you had stuff like Hammerlock, but there wasn't a lot else around at that point.
There was a guy that I can't remember, and I feel bad because I can't remember his name right now. But he was really over there in the UK, and ended up working in I think TNA for a while and a few other companies.
Could have been Doug Williams, maybe.
Doug Williams.
It's always Doug.
Yes. He was great, man. Even as a younger guy, and me coming from WWF at the time and working in Hammerlock. Yeah, he was a real good guy. I always remember I really liked him a lot. And he was talented and just a really good worker, man. I remember that about him definitely.
Nice. Yeah. So let's get to your third and final match then. So we've had CM Punk and John Cena from Money in the Bank. We had Bret Hart versus Steve Austin from WrestleMania. Brian Clark, what is your third and final match for your Desert Island?
Okay, now I don't know the exact year. I thought I had it written down.
That's okay. We could do that.
You'll know. Okay.
We'll sort that.
It was a ladder. It was I want to say a TLC, but it had Edge and Christian, the Dudleys, and the Hardy. Yes. So that match, probably because they just, it's a change from the first two, and it's a little bit of hardcore, a little bit, you know. So I threw that one in there. But I'm a huge Stan Hansen fan, so I could go back and, you know, as being a, when we won the All Japan titles, that's who presented us the belts. And I was a huge fan of his way back when. I could go that match, or I could go to something with Stan Hansen. Either or, both of those.
Go on. So I think the one you're talking about, sort of the hardcore aggressive one, that would be the triple threat TLC from WrestleMania 17, I want to say. Possibly WrestleMania 17. and that, or are you saying a Stan Hansen match?
Well,
from the Lariat.
Well, yeah. Stan was just, I mean, he was just such a tough individual that being able to do that Japan schedule for that many years, just the testament of how.
When you think of Stan reeling back for one of those beastly lariats in the middle of a loud applauding Japanese crowd, who is on the receiving end? When you think of something like that, if we can try and narrow down a Stan Hansen match, Brian. Those beefy lariats. Who's taking a big beefy lariat from Stan Hansen?
Maybe Brody, maybe Steve Williams. you know,
I mean, Stan Hansen, Dr. Death, seems like an absolute war between those guys.
Yes. Okay. Oklahoma versus Texas. You know,
That feels very All Japan, actually. That feels very All Japan.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time you saw Stan Hansen? I reckon we'll put a Stan Hansen match in, Brian. Like, it's right to put a Stan Hansen in. But do you remember the first time that you saw Stan?
It had to be the late 70s, maybe early to mid 80s, that time frame. And then I also remember him when he came through in WCW. I was still just breaking in. I hadn't even really got started. But I remember he came in on Halloween Havoc, I think in 1990, against Lex Luger. And he just beat the crap out of him. And then when the match was over, he spit chewing tobacco all over him. Stan was something else, man. I mean, just a badass. Yeah.
And he, as you say, he awarded you the tag team titles in Japan.
Yes, he presented us. Yes, that
did
was
you did
highest,
you did you get to have a chat with him and converse with him and talk about stuff? Did you pick his brains?
Yes, yeah, we talked. And I was so honored. I've got a buddy of mine, Jonathan O'Dwyer, who's in Limerick, Ireland. He does a lot of my promotional stuff, and he handles like some of the gifts and stuff that I put up. And he's got a few clips of where Stan is presenting us the belts in Osaka, sold out. And to me, it didn't get any higher than that. I don't know what would be with having your friend and your partner, your tag team partner, and then winning that, those straps, man, that was, and they're right back there. That was a very proud moment, without a doubt.
And chatting to you has been a very proud moment of mine as well, sir. As a big fan of your work for a very long time, it means a lot that we finally got this together. And let's do the plugs, brother. Let's sell stuff. Let's sell stuff. You can buy Adam Bomb Bombs. They're a thing, and they're available. They're right behind us.
I guess we can start with my eBay store, which is it's Adam Bomb Dash Chronic, K-R-O-N-I-K, Adam Bomb-Chronic eBay. There I have I haven't decided to put up any ring-worn gear yet. I do have a pretty good bit of it. I haven't parted with any of that. But I do have the bombs, goggles, any 8x10 you would want, including all my new 2021 designs, including the 2021 Tom Fleming, who now works for Marvel Comics. So that is an 8x10 t-shirt poster. My t-shirts are at ProWrestlingTees.com, also Wrestle Merch Central in the UK and Europe. And I have a new action figure that was just released a few weeks ago at Cella Toys, the brand new Adam Bomb. And that will be followed up by Chronic and possibly two versions of Wrath. So, and then of course appearances from here until the end of the year as of now.
So this is going out on this coming Wednesday, which is the 1st of September. So any plans for the weekend, Brian? Are you going to be anywhere this weekend, or maybe when's the next one going to be?
I would look at my schedule. I have Hartford, Connecticut, Albany, New York, Boston, Huntington Beach, California, and then also Phoenix, Arizona, which is where I live. So those are just the first five that I know for sure. If anyone follows me, that I'm at Real Brian Clark on Twitter, and I always post my events of where I'm going, and the same thing on Facebook. So I'm pretty active on there. I let everybody know where I'm at, what's going on with me. And of course, Skylar is getting over. She's international. She's done Australia, UK, Puerto Rico, you know. So yeah, it's bad. I'm retired, but it doesn't feel like it. We got another property that we just purchased, and we actually going to sell this property. So we're doing the whole real estate. That's keeping me really busy. Prepping one place and buying another and selling another. It's a full-time job.
That's great that you're still in a position where you're so busy and you seem incredibly fulfilled by everything as well.
That's a blessing. Yeah, it is. I'm thankful every day. I enjoy the interaction with the fans. 99% of the fans are just great. I mean, they really are. There's always going to be one who you just gonna have to delete. So, you know what? A little bit too much yap yap or whatever the case may be. There's always one, and that's just the way it is. But that doesn't take away from the 99% that are great. And so I enjoy the interaction. It's fun. It's I love to do the meet and greets and the signings. It's like I said, it's good stuff.
At Real Brian Clark on Twitter. If nothing else, you get plenty of pictures of Skylar on there as well.
Oh yeah, you're gonna get a lot. You're going to get a lot of that.
Brian would also love it if you took time to check out Jonathan Dwyer and Pro Wrestling Defined. You can do that on Twitter at Pro Defined. My thanks to Brian Clark for joining me today on Cultaholic Island. For more than 100 conversations like this one, search Desert Island Graps on.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Spotify. Stay safe. Love you. Bye.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.